Welcome to Walking Between the Worlds with Al Mean. This hour, you will receive powerful revelations of a world where mystery and miracles are commonplace. Here's your host, Al Mean.
Living in a state of absolute truth with others begins with complete truth within ourselves. This entails the removal of the filters that obscure our inner light and hinder the pure communication from Source. These filters are the foremost cause of the frustration that light seekers feel when their reach for the truth does not produce the mastery they seek. But truth, when seen through filters, cannot express in our life. We must shed the baggage. And the first place that it must be shed is the feelings of guilt and unworthiness. We cannot see others clearly in the roles that they have undertaken to play on behalf of the infinite that gave them life. But how can we fully give if we do not see that they are worthy of receiving all from the hands of their Creator? It is truly because we see ourselves as unworthy that we see others as the same, and it taints the way we give of ourselves to others. I ask now that the Master Ruchir, who has come to the North American continent to bring with him the order of the White Dove, as long foretold to be begun in 2007 in the month of September, I ask him to read on giving with pure and absolute truth in our souls as one being to another. And we read from Khalil Gibran's book, The Prophet.
On giving. Then said a rich man, "Speak to us of giving." And he answered, "You give but little when you give of your possessions. It is when you give of yourself that you truly give. For what are your possessions but things you keep in guard, for fear you may need them tomorrow? And tomorrow, what shall tomorrow bring to the overprudent dog, burying bones in the trackless sand as he follows the pilgrims to the holy city? And what is fear of need but need itself? Is not dread of thirst when your well is full, thirst that is unquenchable? There are those who give little of the much which they have, and they give it for recognition, and their hidden desire makes their gifts unwholesome. And there are those who have little and give it all. These are the believers in life and the bounty of life, and their coffer is never empty. There are those who give with joy, and that joy is their reward. And there are those who give with pain, and that pain is their baptism. And there are those who give and know not pain in giving, nor do they seek joy, nor give with mindfulness of virtue. They give as yonder valley the myrtle breathes its fragrance into space. Through the hands of such disease, God speaks, and from behind their eyes he smiles upon the earth. It is well to give when asked, but it is better to give unasked through understanding. And to the open-handed, the search for one who shall receive is joy greater than giving. And is there aught you would withhold? All you have shall someday be given. Therefore give now, that the season of giving may be yours and not your inheritors. You often say, "I would give, but only to the deserving." The trees in your orchard say not so, nor the flocks in your pasture. They give that they may live, for to withhold is to perish. Surely he who is worthy to receive his days and his nights is worthy of all else from you. And he who has deserved to drink from the ocean of life deserves to fill his cup from your little stream. And what deserved greater shall there be than that which lies in the courage and the confidence, nay, the charity of receiving? And who are you that men should rend their bosom and unfeel their pride, that you may see their worth naked and their pride unabashed? See first that you yourself deserve to be a giver and an instrument of giving. For in truth it is life that gives unto life, while you, who deem yourself a giver, are but a witness. And you receivers, and you are all receivers, assume no weight of gratitude, lest you lay a yoke upon yourself and upon him who gives. Rather, rise together with the giver on his gifts as on wings. For to be overmindful of your debt is to doubt his generosity, who has the free-hearted earth for mother and God for father.
It is through withholding that we feel pain. The pain we feel is literally the love we withhold. And it is love that helps us see and live the absolute truth. Marcel Proust said, "Being in love is the joy. Being out of love is the illusion." Emerson wrote, "Alas, I know not why. Each man sees over his own experience a certain stain of error, whilst that of other men looks fair and ideal. The reason we look back with so much regret at what we regard as our folly, not seeing it in the absolute truth of light, is that the memory of our higher levels of consciousness lies not far submerged beneath the surface of mind. We suppress with pain the memory of the faces we once loved, and guilt taints many of the choices we have made in our lives. But to see this unclearly is to dishonor the journey of our lives. However, by not acknowledging the worth of our seeming errors as our greatest teachers of wisdom, remove one failed relationship or one foolish choice, and one would also have to remove as much wisdom and insight. Nowhere does the sting of self-censure torture us more than in the memories of love lost or misplaced. Love leads us to truth. But the word love is bandied about from pulpits, across restaurant tables, in flowery cards of all descriptions. The fact is that very few philosophers have shed much light on how the love we feel in romance and the love for God and creation can be reconciled. Romantic love is either extolled in the very abundant sources of literature, or the more spiritual writings dismiss it as an unworthy reflection of infinite love. The result is that because romantic love is the most intoxicating feeling most humans will ever have, called by philosophers the enchantment of human life, the guilt is compounded by feeling that such intense love should instead have been given to God. In the lives of most, no love will ever again compare to the heady, runaway, romantic emotion of youth. Thus we find ourselves lacking in devotion, and so try to love the infinite with all the fervor we can muster. To most, a nebulous and undefined concept. This often creates religious fanatics who, failing in their feelings, try to compensate through their actions. It is the very turbulence of our romantic love that carves out of our souls the hollows that will hold a greater love, and with it, a greater wisdom. Like the stormiest seas carving the deepest caverns in the cliffs, so too the most painful memories create our deepest capacity for love and our highest ability to define newer truths. Beloved ones, as we learn through our earthly loves how to surrender to something greater, that one day we may merge with our higher identity, we find through love's muse the poet within us, the spontaneity of the inner child. We remember once again what it is like to follow our hearts and abandon reason. Love mellows us and reduces our resistance to life. And as we grow older, what we forfeit in intensity, we gain in inclusiveness. The qualities of inclusiveness and surrender prepare us for the place where truth becomes self-evident, the place of God consciousness. And here we encounter the silence of the mind. The heart cannot fully hear truth where there is an internal dialogue. As the mind silences, the heart bursts open with all-encompassing, melting tenderness for all life. Divine love has taken its place upon the throne of the heart, and truth reveals itself moment by moment.
In this, the fourth book, The Ring of Truth, which chronicles Almeen's journey, she tells of the promise and the potential inherent in the resurgence of the feminine principle, increasingly felt in all aspects of current human experience. The operation of new laws governing the cosmos are explained together with the reasons for their creation. We are introduced to Mother, the primal creative energy that pervades every aspect of existence. We learn of her love and her laws and how to incorporate them into every thought and act. We are given samples of her divine language, its meaning, and its power. Mother's great gift to humanity, the healing power of Elvispada, is revealed. This new approach to dissolving disease of mind, spirit, and body replaces previously existing methodologies. Application of its techniques removes old barriers of physically oriented existence and opens a broad pathway to a life of joy and fulfillment. Discover Mother and the Ring of Truth, as well as all of Almeen's books, CDs, lectures, workshops, or magazine by logging on to www.spiritualjourneys.com.
You've been walking between the worlds with Almeen. To learn more about Almeen and the mystical keys of life, log on now to www.spiritualjourneys.com.
But it is in shedding the baggage that absolute truth reveals itself. We must also look, therefore, at the cumbersome weight of self-reflection. Self-reflection sees form as real. It weighs itself against external criteria imposed upon us by the values of others. It does not leave room for the truthful guidance of our heart, that place of authentic living, where potential is lived out moment by moment, and every second is as new as the dawn. It is in carrying the weight of self-reflection that we either become pompous in our self-evaluation, overlooking the value of lesser light, Or we become inundated with self-pity and feelings of unworthiness, not understanding the infinite value that every thread has in the spider web of light that is the interconnectedness of all life. Self-reflection. It comes from abandoning the self by not following the dictates of our heart and listening to the guidance of what brings joy to our path. For when we so abandon life in the face of duty, we slumber and forget instead that life is meant to be beauty. We do our tasks mindlessly. We do not see the valuable contribution of our work as a sacrifice upon the altar of the evolution of all life. We read now from the Prophet on work.
Then a plowman said, "Speak to us of work." And he answered, saying, "You work that you may keep pace with the earth and the soul of the earth. For to be idle is to become a stranger unto the seasons and to step out of life's procession that marches in majesty and proud submission towards the infinite. When you work, you are a flute through whose heart the whispering of the hours turns to music. Which of you would be a reed, dumb and silent, when all else sings together in unison? Always you have been told that work is a curse and labor a misfortune. But I say to you that when you work, you fulfill a part of earth's furthest dream, assigned to you when that dream was born. And in keeping yourself with labor, you are in truth loving life, and to love life through labor is to be intimate with life's inmost secret. But if you in your pain call birth an affliction, and the support of the flesh a curse written upon your brow, then I answer that not but the sweat of your then I answer that not but the sweat of your brow shall wash away that which is written."
Did you want to do that little piece again?
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, just we'll leave a little spot here and just go back and start that bit again. They'll just edit it right out.
"But if you in your pain call birth an affliction, and the support of the flesh a curse written upon your brow, then I answer that naught but the sweat of your brow shall wash away that which is written. You have been told also life is darkness, and in your weariness you echo what was said by the weary. And I say that life is indeed darkness, save when there is urge. And all urge is blind, save when there is knowledge. And all knowledge is vain, save when there is work. And all work is empty, save when there is love. And when you work with love, you bind yourself, and to one another, and to God. And what is it to work with love? It is to weave the cloth with threads drawn from your heart, even as if your beloved were to wear that cloth. It is to build a house with affection, even as if your beloved were to dwell in that house. It is to sow seeds with tenderness and reap the harvest with joy, even as if, It is to sow seeds with tenderness and reap the harvest with joy, even as if your beloved were to eat the fruits. It is to charge all things you fashion with a breath of your own spirit, and to know that all are, and to know that all the blessed dead are standing about you and watching. Often have I heard you say, as if speaking in sleep, he who works in marble and finds the shape of his own soul in the stone is a nobler than he who plows the soil. And he who seizes the rainbow to lay it on a cloth in the likeness of man is more than he who makes the sandals for a feet. But I say, not in sleep, but in the over-wakefulness of noontide, that the wind speaks not more sweetly to the giant oaks than to the leaves of all the blades of grass. And he alone is great, who turns the voice of the wind into a song made sweeter by his own loving. Work is love made visible. And if you cannot work with love, but only with distaste, it is better that you should leave your work and sit at the gate of the temple and take alms of those who work with joy. For if you bake bread with indifference, you bake a bitter bread that feeds but half man's hunger. And if you grudge the crushing of the grapes, your grudge distills a poison in the wine. And if you sing though as angels, and love not the singing, you muffle men's ears to the voices of the day and the voices of the night.
And it is in our self-pity where we poison our own lives. Yet the ancient seers have found that self-pity goes hand in hand with self-importance. For self-importance is but a mask worn by self-pity. And it is when we embrace self-reflection in the form of self-pity and self-importance that we are indeed giving a false recognition to another's value. For what is true humility but the understanding that in the spider web and weaving of life, every thread has equal importance? And what is humility but the knowing that from our vantage point and limited perspective, we cannot possibly know and must therefore allow the voice of truth to guide us through the heart by opening that gate through humility. And now we speak of the greatest encumbrance of all, to hearing and living in absolute truth. And that is the prison bars of social conditioning. Those steps and stages that through the ages, bit by bit, create around us a prison built of the bricks of these experiences. One method of overcoming the past is called recapitulation. It is the scrutiny of past occurrences that still control our behavior by causing us to have knee-jerk responses to people, events, and beliefs. Recapitulation assists us to release debris and retrieve any parts of ourselves that become lost due to past trauma. If we have any identity labels, a sense of self-importance, or if we are still judging people or events as good or bad, then we need to clear it. Recapitulation can occur spontaneously, but more often than not, it requires effort. To make it easier, we place it in categories, year by year, family, spouses, sexual partners, friends, teachers, classmates, students, bosses, etc. Sometimes we may receive snapshots of the past during the dream state. That is a signal that those events need to be released. It is also helpful if we can identify cyclical patterns in our life. Then we can recapitulate a whole cycle, and it releases all similar cycles. Consequently, as you review your life, be sure to watch for cycles within cycles. The process of recapitulation occurs naturally at death. For several hours following death, our soul stays inside the energy field that surrounds the body, which is in the shape of an egg, and our whole life passes in front of us. As we witness this, we are able to see it from the infinite's perspective, and as a result, our whole life is recapitulated. Then the soul passes through to the spirit world, and the energy field collapses upon itself, and the ultimate purification rite completes itself, which is death.
In this, the fourth book, The Ring of Truth, which chronicles Almaine's journey, she tells of the promise and the potential inherent in the resurgence of the feminine principle, increasingly felt in all aspects of current human experience. The operation of the new laws governing the cosmos are explained together with the reasons for their creation. We are introduced to Mother, the primal creative energy that pervades every aspect of existence. We learn of her love and her laws and how to incorporate them into every thought and act. We are given samples of her divine language, its meaning, and its power. Mother's great gift to humanity, the healing power of Elvispada, is revealed. This new approach to dissolving disease of mind, spirit, and body replaces previously existing methodologies. Application of its techniques removes all barriers of physically oriented existence and opens a broad pathway to a life of joy and fulfillment. Discover Mother and the Ring of Truth, as well as all of Almaine's books, CDs, lectures, workshops, or magazine by logging on to www.spiritualjourneys.com.
You've been walking between the worlds with Almaine. To learn more about Almaine and the mystical keys of life, log on now to www.spiritualjourneys.com.
In following the steps of recapitulation, it yields a clarity and strength. We no longer lose energy trying to make people and events relate to the world in a predetermined way. We release the past and all the baggage associated with it. And finally, we can see clearly the truth before us. Today's truth may not be tomorrow's truth, but the absolute truth that remains is the guidance of our heart as to the clarity of our next step. For any person or situation that still brings up painful emotions or knee-jerk reactions, we ask certain questions. The first five questions assist us in seeing what is really going on. The other steps that follow are attitude adjustments. We look for the lesson that Spirit wishes us to embrace. And therefore, the first question we ask, what is the lesson? For example, the lesson may be that we need to speak our truth. For we speak truth when we answer these questions. Is it true? Is it kind and life-enhancing to that individual's indwelling life? And is it necessary? So we may manifest laryngitis, or someone might appear to mirror to us that we frequently suppress the truth of our voice. He or she may violate our boundaries to get our attention. We need to protect ourselves by voicing our truth that this behavior is unacceptable. Accepting the unacceptable isn't saintly. It is dishonest to the divinity within us. Next we ask, what is the contract? Everyone who interacts with us has made an agreement prior to this incarnation to assist with our growth. They may have agreed to push us over the edge and we may do likewise for them. Ask, what is the contract that you and I are playing out? I have had several near-death experiences, and while in the spirit world, I was awestruck by the extensive contracts people have with each other. It is with great love that many agree to be our catalyst as perpetrators. When we are in balance, there is no growth. So it is a signal to the universe to knock us out of balance, so the lessons will continue. Thus we pull relationships into our lives that test us in every imaginable way. People don't like to change, and many go to great extremes to avoid it, even if it is a dysfunctional situation. The reason many dislike change is because they feel separated from Source. They believe they are alone and completely cut off from nurturing by the Creator. Understanding our contracts with others will help us accomplish what Christ said, judge not by appearances. What he meant was, when we are in the throes of difficult experiences, don't look at them. Look behind them. The third question we ask is, what is the role? Am I playing the victim? Am I playing the bad guy? Am I playing the teacher or the student? What role am I playing within this contract? Also look at the role others are playing. For example, we may have a tyrant in our life. It may be our spouse, mother, or boss. Once you establish that, see who you are in relation to that other person's role. Remember, we may change our role at any time because we create our reality. Truth is something sought by the student. It is what a master spontaneously brings moment by moment to all life. Number four, what is the mirror? We pull relationships into our life. That mirror, what we are, what we have given away, what we still place judgment on, or what we haven't developed yet. If our innocence is gone, we may find ourselves intensely attracted to a young person. If we have given our integrity away, we may fall in love with a missionary who in our eyes represents integrity. Another thing that can be mirrored is that which we judge. If we have problems dealing with people who lie, then we are placing a judgment on them and therefore attract liars. If a man isn't in touch with his feminine side, he might choose a woman who is overbalanced. Let's do that part again. If a man isn't in touch with his feminine side, he might choose a woman who is overbalanced in her feminine to make him feel more complete. Later he becomes frustrated because he cannot leave town and have her cope when there's a leak in the pipes. These little irritations could build into resentment unless he sees that he deliberately chose her to mirror his underdeveloped feminine side. The fifth question, what is the gift? Every person we encounter comes to give us a gift and receive one. Ask, what gift am I supposed to give this person? It may be something as simple as offering him the gift of unconditional love. Or we may recognize something beautiful that no one else has seen. Or we may genuinely listen to a man and for the first time in years, he feels understood. Another time, we may encounter a woman who reacts with bursts of anger, and we have the opportunity to demonstrate our mastery of the situation. The last four questions are attitude adjustments. The first question is, can I allow? This is the point of discerning what must be allowed, what has to be changed, and finding the courage to act. Imagine yourself as the water in a river. If a rock is in front of you, are you going to stop or flow around the rock? We have masterfully created every situation in our life, even the rock. So can we just allow it to be there for this moment? Is this battle ours? A battle is always for perception. And a battle is only worth fighting if the stakes are worth having. If you have already learned the lesson, no need to refight the battle. Can I accept? We cannot accept the painful things that happen to us unless we begin to see the perfection underlying the web of appearances. The truth underlying the appearances. I read from The Door of Everything by Ruby Nelson. If you have searched for me, if you would become conscious of my presence, look squarely in my face. Stretch your mind and heart and take a long, thorough, independent look. I will be everywhere, staring boldly back at you. If you look at the sky, you will know that I am blue. If you look at the night, you will know that I am black. If you look at a leaf, you will know that I am green. If you look at the midday sun, I will dazzle you with my brightness. If you look into the eyes of your husband or your wife, you will see me twinkle. If you look at the ground on which you stand, you will know that it is holy. Every particle of dirt under your feet is a manifestation of my consciousness, expressing in matter. And in the microcosmic structure of this dirt exists the unchallenged pattern of my universal perfection. If you could behold these particles of dirt with extended vision, you would see that they are vibrant with my eternal light. The radiant light of my presence is in all things. Underneath the appearances of imperfection, we will find the absolute truth that all is in divine order. Can I release? To release is to let go of the energy surrounding the person or the event. If we don't release, we keep it alive by feeding it energy through thoughts, sometimes even subconsciously. If we are in conflict with our partner, even if he or she has violated us in some way, the best thing to do is to walk through these steps and gain the insights. Then release it by changing focus and placing it on something positive. The last question will turn every event into a stepping stone of ascension. Can I be grateful? Beloved ones, if we have truly done the other steps, we can be grateful for the absolute truths that these events have revealed to us. For it is in hardship that our greatest teachers are found. And it is through the use of friction that we move with our feet across the floor.
In this, the fourth book, The Ring of Truth, which chronicles Almaine's journey, she tells of the promise and the potential inherent in the resurgence of the feminine principle, increasingly felt in all aspects of current human experience. The operation of new laws governing the cosmos are explained together with the reasons for their creation. We are introduced to Mother, the primal creative energy that pervades every aspect of existence. We learn of her love and her laws and how to incorporate them into every thought and act. We are given samples of her divine language, its meaning, and its power. Mother's great gift to humanity, the healing power of Elvispada, is revealed. This new approach to dissolving disease of mind, spirit, and body replaces previously existing methodologies. Application of its techniques removes all barriers of physically oriented existence and opens a broad pathway to a life of joy and fulfillment. Discover Mother and the Ring of Truth, as well as all of Almeen's books, CDs, lectures, workshops, or magazine by logging on to www.spiritualjourneys.com.
You've been walking between the worlds with Almeen. To learn more about Almeen and the mystical keys of life, log on now to www.spiritualjourneys.com.
But let us look a little closer at the statement that it is a student that searches for truth everywhere. And if that student has shielded himself from the scrutiny of his own deep and thorough knowledge of his heart, then he will not have accumulated much personal power. And although he may read many books trying to find the truth, he shall not. But in observing truthfully and accurately what underlies our experiences, in gaining the truth from them, is the time when we start to enter our mastery. And then even a single sentence can be enough to reveal to us our next truth. How does a master spontaneously create truth moment by moment? I read again from The Door of Everything, by Ruby Nelson. Your submerged mind extends into the central area of feeling, the heart. I live also in your heart, as a reservoir of love that is immeasurable. Your hopes and dreams and high aspirations rise up from this reservoir of feeling. They are the echoes of my still small voice, bursting through to your surface mind like notes of music springing out of the silence, forever urging you onward toward more prolific expression of your hidden skills and talents. Unfortunately, much more than hopes and dreams and high aspirations has been born in your central reservoir of feeling. For mind and heart have always worked together to form a powerful force. When thought combines with feeling, activity is set in motion. Things are brought about. The more intense the feeling, the greater is its active force. It is for this one reason, simple though it may sound, that the many kinds of troubles which plague the world have been brought into existence. My children have misused their thoughts. They have misused their feelings, innocently doing so, of course, not knowing of the mighty forces set in motion when thoughts and feelings blend. It is when we live in states of praise, in upward living, that we create a life of beauty and absolute truth. And it is through living deeply, every moment exploring that which is before us, looking behind the appearances, that even something that we take for granted, as sitting down to a meal, becomes fraught with lessons and revelations of truth. We read now from the prophet.
On eating and drinking. Then an old man, the keeper of an inn, said, speak to us of eating and drinking, and he said, "Would that you could live on the fragrance of the earth, and like an air plant be sustained by the light. But since you must kill to eat, and rob the young of its mother's milk to quench your thirst, let it then be an act of worship, and let your board stand an altar." Sorry, do that again. "And let your board stand an altar on which the pure and the innocent of forest and plain are sacrificed, for that which is pure and still more innocent in man. When you kill a beast, say to him in your heart, 'By the same power that slays you, I too am slain, and I too shall be consumed. For the law that delivered you into my hand shall deliver me into a mightier hand. Your blood and my blood is naught but the sap that feeds the tree of heaven. And when you crush an apple with your teeth, say to it in your heart, your seeds shall live in my body, and the buds of your tomorrow shall blossom in my heart, and your fragrance shall be my breath, and together we shall rejoice through all the seasons. And in the autumn, when you gather the grapes of your vineyard for the winepress, say in your heart, I too am a vineyard, and my fruit shall be gathered for the winepress. And like new wine, I shall be kept in eternal vessels. And in winter, when you draw the wine, let there be in your heart a song for each cup. And let there be in the song a remembrance for the autumn days, and for the vineyards, and for the winepress."
To live in a state of praise is to see the truth of life. As a child, I had a fear of heights. When on the high rides of the carnival, or perched in our mulberry tree, I found that I could overcome it by focusing on the far horizon, by slightly altering the focus of my eyes. The dizzy heights became friendlier. Praise is an attitude that focuses on the distant vistas and allows itself to enjoy the breathtaking view. It acknowledges that there is an unpaid bill, but focuses instead on the nurturing and abundant supply that flows to one who trusts in it. It does not disassociate from the cares of today, but rather sees them in their true context as harbingers of growth. Praise is an attitude of thoughts raised heavenward. Nowhere better illustrated than the story of Christ walking on the water as told in the New Testament. He did not focus on the stormy seas, but steadfastly kept his focus on indwelling life rather than form. The disciple Peter, on the other hand, who wished to walk on the water also, saw the billowing waves and the high winds and sank beneath the water.
1 minute.
The master had to reach forth his hand and save him. But Christ lived in a state of praise. Peter did not. States of praise have been employed for eons by those made holy by association. As an ascension attitude, it needs to be tempered by experience. It is not to withdraw from life to spend our days singing songs of praise to the infinite. Beloved ones, it is in upward living, in living states of praise, that truth reveals itself to our eyes. It is through loving life that the whispers of our hearts are heard, in clarity and in guidance. May we always live our highest truth, the dictates of our hearts.
We hope you have enjoyed today's show, Walking Between the Worlds with Al Meen.